Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Crimson Tempest by Anthony James. Narrated by Neil Heligers. An unnamed planet, Carnius 12 system. Year 31 of the Human-Ghast War. The repair bot had been busy for a long time. It was slow and methodical, blessed with an infinite patience. For over 50 years it had been working on a single task, which was to bring the vessel's mainframe back online. The damage was extensive, but the robot continued unabated even though it was almost out of power. It hadn't been programmed with anything as pointless as human emotions to make it care about how long it took, or even whether or not it would be successful. All it could do was go through the trillions of tiny steps required to bring the ship's main computer systems to an operational state. Given the time and the materials, the robot could have constructed a completely fresh core, though its power cell would have decayed long before it could accomplish such a monumental task. There was a second core hiding behind the first. This core was almost undamaged, though it was unable to access any of the spacecraft systems except by routing through the first. It waited with patience. Success came without witness. On the ship's main bridge, a screen winked briefly into life before fading again. A different screen illuminated, 100 billion lines of code scrolling up and vanishing in the blinking of an eye. Deep within the ship, the mainframe became semi-aware again. The screen on the bridge flickered and then went out. The ship's core wasn't wasteful, and it didn't need to expend even this infinitesimally small amount of energy. The bridge screens were for human pilots, and this ship hadn't carried a crew. For the next 3 seconds, it checked the status of the onboard systems. There was extensive damage to almost every system and subsystem. The single remaining repair bot had the primary task of repairing the core, with the propulsion, weapons, and life support systems a lower priority. As such, there was little the mainframe could do for the moment. The transmission systems were offline, damaged. But the ship considered that it could reroute power away from the primary, secondary, and tertiary communication systems in order to activate the emergency antenna. The concern was, the emergency system lacked the capability to broadcast with full encryption. The ESS Crimson ran through the possibilities and decided the risk was worthwhile. It sent the signal and waited for a response. 1. The game of cat and mouse had lasted almost 2 days. So far, the damaged Ghast light cruiser, a Kraven class, had managed to keep the gas giant Gyre 12 between itself and the pursuing ship, ES Detriment. It was a dangerous game for all parties. The two ships weren't built for extended periods in low orbit, and the snub nose of the Detriment's hull glowed a dull orange from the heat of the planet and the blossoming clouds of silicate which spilled thousands of kilometers above the tempestuous surface. Captain John Nathan Duggan was standing on the cramped bridge, embedded deep within the 520-meter length of the Vincent-class warship. Gunners was the nickname given to them by their crew. They were an ancient design, yet modular and easy to patch in new technology, which was enough to keep hundreds of these workhorses still in service. There was something glorious about serving on ships like this, and their crews had the shortest expected lifespan of anyone in the Space Corps. It either made them proud enough to fight like demons, or they tried to get a placement elsewhere. Many grew to love working on the gunners, and if they'd been offered a transfer to a Hadron class, they'd turn the chance down. There was something about fighting on the edge that appealed to certain people and they'd never want to serve elsewhere. There were no windows on the bridge. A single long screen against the bulkhead projected a 360-degree view of everything around the vessel, whilst displays and readouts flashed with continuously updated status reports. There was only just about room for four people, with the cracked leather seats giving no illusion of comfort. An ancient design flaw, never fixed on subsequent revisions of the Vincent class, meant that the air conditioning wasn't strong enough to keep the bridge at anything like an acceptable temperature. It was hot, and the air carried tangy odors of oil, grease, and electricity. Duggan wiped the sweat from his forehead with the back of his hand. He was angry, furious almost, that the gassed ship had evaded them for so long. "What the hell do they think they're playing at?" he asked, not for the first time. He wasn't expecting an answer and got none. "Anything on the Fars?" he asked. "No ping. Not even an echo of a ping," replied Second Lieutenant Frank Cheener. He had his face glued to a bank of glowing green screens in front of him. To Cheener's left and right, the ship's sensors spilled out page after page of readouts. Sometimes a trained comms man could spot an anomaly to indicate the presence of something too subtle to register on the screens. Cheener took another shaky gulp from his high-stem drink can. "They still outgun us, Captain," said Commander Lucy McLashen. "And we have no idea how long their distress beacon was sending before we destroyed it." Duggan growled. He knew he was being stupid. Stupid and stubborn. They'd caught the gas ship unawares, and Duggan had decided to take a shot at it. The detriment had two batteries of the latest Lambda missiles, one of which had evaded the enemy ship's fuel cannons and torn a vast hole in her engines. With the gassed ship drifting, Duggan thought he'd scored a win. Then, without warning, it had happened. Everything on the detriment had gone dead. Stone cold dead. Every light and every screen winked out of existence, as if a mysterious hand had pressed a central power button. They'd been lucky that the gassed ship's momentum had carried it out of weapons range. After exactly 1 minute, everything had come back online, as if nothing had ever been wrong. The crew had checked the error logs, but as far as the ship's compact mainframe was concerned, nothing whatsoever had happened. By the time the sublight engines had fired up again, the gassed ship had dropped into the gas giant's orbit and used the iron and silicate atmosphere to hide itself from the detriment's sight. Duggan couldn't even leave his ship high and stationary from the gassed to come to him. The enemy light cruiser could evade detection simply by staying low beneath the swirling gases of the atmosphere. It was now a matter of luck as to when or if Duggan could force another engagement. "How long till they can get their deep vision drives online?" Duggan asked. "I'd only be guessing, Captain," said Lieutenant Bill Breeze. "Their technology works like ours, but not like ours. We made a big hole in their hull. Our sensors suggest we took out 23% of their engine mass. It all depends on how good their ship's core is at rerouting. Hours, days, or weeks, take your pick." Duggan already knew this. He just couldn't stop himself from asking again. He felt clenched up tight, as if he had to do something, but with no control over what. There wasn't even any room for him to pace in order to work off steam, and he didn't dare leave the bridge for long enough to spend a couple hours in the ship's gym. "They can't stay lucky forever," Duggan said quietly. On the screen in front of him, the computer-enhanced image of Geyer 12 drifted slowly to the left, against a background of distant stars which showed as magnified specks against the pure blackness. Staring out into those black depths gave Duggan a feeling he'd never been able to put words to. The emptiness had frightened him once. Now he craved it. In the background, the air conditioning thrummed, and the integrity warning system continued to bleep softly at the intense stresses being placed on the alloys that comprise the hull.
"Got a fission signature, Captain," said Breeze,
the loudness of his voice cutting across the low noise of the bridge.
"Where is it? How far?"
asked Duggan at once, crossing over to stand at Breeze's shoulder.
111,000 clicks anti-clockwise with a 30-degree offset from our orbit. They're almost a third of a circuit ahead of us.
Can we get to them before they jump out of orbit?
Not a chance. Not unless you want us to burn up, said McGlashan. 13 minutes so we can get close enough for the lambdas.
Unlucky 13, said Chainer.
Duggan swore.
How long till they can go to light speed?
There wasn't a planet dense enough to keep that hidden from the detriment sensors. If the gas ship had managed to get enough of its fission engines online, it could outrun the smaller Vincent class.
The output from their engines means they'll be gone in 5 minutes, Breeze announced. Nope, they've stepped it up. Make that 3 minutes.
Duggan increased power to the detriment sublight engines. The warning bleep increased in volume at once, and a faint vibration began underfoot.
Hold it together, old girl.
11 minutes till engagement, said McGlashan.
Her face was a pattern of reflected light strobes as she focused on the screens in front of her.
1 minute till they're gone, said Chainer.
We are not going to make it,
McGlashan told them, as if they hadn't already guessed.
The fission signature's faded, Captain, announced Breeze.
His face showed a mixture of elation and fear.
Whatever they tried, it didn't work.
And now we know exactly where they are.
They must know we've picked them up, said McGlashan.
Duggan ran his fingers across a couple of the screens on a console in front of him, and then touched another to override the ship's safety warning. The detriment's speed increased another 5%, and the vibration became a shuddering. The warning bleep turned into a continuous tone to let the crew know that the hull temperature had gone 10% above its design maximum.
The boys and girls below will be getting worried, McGlashan told him.
I want those bastards, said Duggan.
With a grunt, he relented and backed off the power. There was no point in taking the risk for such a small gain. The gas ship would be lost in the atmosphere by the time they got to where the fission signature had come from. He looked across and saw McGlashan take a deep breath and shake her head to free the droplets of sweat from her eyebrows.
9 minutes, she said.
In front of Duggan, another screen lit up a bright blue. Letters formed on the screen. Priority message delivered. It wasn't the time for distractions, but the detriment's comm system dutifully rolled the lines of text onto the screen. Return to the Juniper. No delays. Terran. Duggan swore again when he read the words.
What's up?
Asked McGlashan.
It's Admiral Terran. He wants us back at the Juniper. Without delay.
He could have picked a better time, said Breeze.
He won't notice a few minutes, will he? Said Duggan, dismissing the message.
Wouldn't want the gas escaping after all this effort we've put in, said Chainer.
Minutes passed and no one dared to break the silence. Duggan drummed his fingers on the gray metal console before him. He felt a line of sweat soaking through the back of his uniform.
3 minutes.
Anything on the FARs?
Nothing. No, wait. Maybe?
Duggan looked over. Chainer was frowning.
What do you mean, maybe?
I thought I saw something for a moment. Maybe.
We can't work on maybes, Lieutenant, said Duggan.
Get the lambdas ready, he said to McGlashan with urgency clear in his voice. And launch countermeasures immediately. McGlashan was good. One of the best. She didn't question the order.
Shock drones away. Bulwarks ready.
Got incoming, said Chainer.
15, 20, fast moving. Missiles, Captain, 4 waves.
Beginning evasive maneuvers, Duggan barked.
A deep grumbling thrummed into the structure of the metal walls as the ship's computer fired them into a randomized patterns of turns and rotations.
A wave of giddiness swept through Duggan, as the detriment's life support system struggled to cope with the incredible changes in gravitational forces that would have otherwise crushed the fragile bodies of the human crew.
"Where are those bastards hiding?" asked Duggan. "Can you get a fix on them?"
"They must have doubled back, Captain," said Breeze.
"I reckon," said Duggan. "They're either very lucky or very good."
Or perhaps this gassed ship just had better sensors than the detriment. They'd been making advances over the last few years. It had plenty of people in the Space Corps worried.
ETA on the missiles?
First wave in 30 seconds, Captain, said Cheener.
Got another fission signature. This one incoming. It's a big one. Dropping out of Light J on the far side of Gyre 12.
One of ours? Asked Duggan, knowing that it couldn't be. The Corps had nothing out here in no man's land. At least, nothing bigger than a gunner.
Cadaverin, said Chainer.
Damn, muttered Duggan. It was a gassed heavy cruiser. The detriment stood no chance against it.
At least their navigator screwed up and took them to the wrong side of the planet.
All around the bridge, status warnings burned orange on the readout screens in a seemingly endless procession of information thrown up frantically by the detriment's mainframe. A multitude of warning bells clamored for attention, their volume low yet impossible to ignore. Neither Duggan nor his crew showed outward sign of fear. They'd been in the Corps for years, decades even. Each of them had seen almost everything that could be imagined. In the end, fear got them nothing. They either lived or died, and often it was luck that saw them through.
First wave of missiles within 15,000 clicks. Launch more shock drones.
Shock drones away.
The view screen lit up, so brightly that it was almost a pure white. The bridge computer stepped in quickly and reduced the intensity so that it wouldn't burn the eyes of the crew.
First wave of missiles down, said Chainer. Next in 10, 15, and 20 seconds.
They've packed them in.
Bring the fission engines online, said Duggan.
Fission engines coming online, Breeze responded. 83 seconds till we can go.
I've nearly got a fix on them, Captain, said Chainer.
The view screen lit up white again. This time there was a grayish tint, as if the ship's computer had adjusted it badly. There was a shuddering accompanied by an almost imperceptible tilt to the left.
Right-hand bulwark got the last one, said McGlashan. They're getting closer.
Deploy shock drones.
Shock drones away. Lambda batteries ready to fire, waiting for a fix.
I've got a fix.
I see it. Lambda's gone, Captain.
Again there was the whiteness on the screen, and the shuddering came. Both bulwarks this time, thought Duggan. Too close for comfort. On the weapons display in front of him, 20 Lambda missiles raced away, tiny dots that could rip a 100-meter hole in the heaviest of armor. The latest versions were still better than anything the Ghasts had, at least as far as he knew.
We can fire another 20 in 10 seconds, said McGlashan.
Her eyes were alive and glowing with the excitement.
The last 5 of the gassed light cruiser's missiles detonated 5,000 clicks away, confused by the swarms of 1-meter metallic shock drones. The drones had tiny single-use engines that could propel them hundreds of clicks in only a few seconds. As they flew, they transmitted signals in all directions and on a billion different wavelengths, in the hope that they would confuse or destroy the guidance systems of incoming missiles. If they failed, there were always the bulwark cannons. But when they fired, everyone knew it was time to cross their fingers.
Lambdas will impact in 25 seconds, said McGlashan.
They've launched another 5 missiles, Captain. Impact in 32 seconds.
I'm getting something else from them. A power surge.
For the second time, everything went dead on the detriment.
2.
The bridge descended into a darkness that was utterly impenetrable. Every screen winked out at once. The air conditioning stopped thrumming and the faint vibration of the detriment's huge engine stopped.
Duggan spoke into the void, his voice calm yet with an unmistakable edge to it. Anyone getting a response from their consoles?
Nothing, Captain.
Dead. No response. Keep trying. None of the crew said anything further, waiting for Duggan to speak. 32 seconds to impact at last report, Duggan said. His hand reached out for the solidity of the plasmetal control panel in front of him. With the absence of sight, his brain marveled at the absolute smoothness of the material beneath his fingers. In his head, Duggan counted down from 25, slowly and calmly, permitting himself a deep breath every 5 digits. The seconds stretched on forever, time on the bridge going so slowly that it might as well have stopped. A long time ago, Duggan had watched a documentary about life aboard the old submarines hundreds of years past. How the sailors must have waited in the confines of those tiny spaces, never knowing if death would take them, until it almost inevitably did. And they called this progress. After a lifetime and more had passed, Duggan's count reached zero, and he breathed out noisily. Drones must have got him. Let's hope they didn't launch any more.
This makes you realize you're alive, said Chainer.
Everything's still completely out, said McGlashan.
It lasted for 1 minute last time. There can't be long left.
You think it's the same thing again, Captain? Asked Breeze.
The Ghasts have used a new weapon on us. I would love to find out if there have been any other reports on the front. For the time being, let's hope that when the lights come back on, we don't have 6 waves of incoming missiles.
I'm mashing the release command for the drones, said McGlashan.
There was a smile in her voice. Duggan couldn't remember the last time she'd been phased, at least not badly.
The lights came on, as if that hidden power switch had been flicked again. Darkness vanished, to be replaced by displays and readouts filled with updates and status reports. Duggan had been so caught between expecting death and expecting light that the brightness caught him unawares, and he had to squint and shield his eyes. The structure of the ship shuddered as energy flowed through 130 million tons of engine mass.
Resume evasive maneuvers. Status reports, Duggan commanded.
We're on a random course already, Captain. The engines are continuing as they were.
Shock drones away. That's our last cargo. Scanners clear. No missiles and no gas light cruiser.
Bringing fission engines back online, 170 seconds. Seems like whatever shut us down has slowed up the mainframe.
Any sign of debris, Lieutenant?
Checking, nothing at the moment.
Could they have gotten away, hidden themselves?
There wasn't enough time to escape. Scanning.
Any transmit logs from the Lambdas? Asked Duggan.
Nothing at all, Captain. If they scored a hit, the transmits didn't reach us, or our sensors were offline and unable to receive.
How long till the cadaverin gets here?
There was no chance they'd have failed to detect the fission engine buildup from the detriment.
At least 8 minutes. Plenty of time, said Breeze.
Plenty of time, echoed Duggan, wondering why he didn't feel convinced. He looked at the displays in front of him, at the carpet of white spotted blackness in the background of the gas giant. It told him nothing at all. There were times when sight was reduced to an almost useless sense, and there was still that primeval feeling of helplessness when it happened.
I'm picking up a cloud of fragments, Captain, said Chainer. Decaying orbit approximately 10,000 clicks from the last known position of the gas ship. We got them.
You're sure?
Definite, sir. No, we've got homing mines. 3 of them only 10 clicks.
How'd you miss those? Snarled Duggan, preparing himself for the impact.
Sorry, sir, no time to pick them up when the power came back.
In the vacuum outside, 3 1-foot diameter mines clamped themselves to the detriment's starboard side. They armed themselves and exploded within half a second. The shaped explosion sent a ripple through the spacecraft's hull, inflicting a violent trauma to the detriment's thick armor plating. Insulated from the worst of the blasts,
the occupants on the bridge felt little more than a trembling through the walls. A stark red emergency light filled the room.
"Status report," shouted Duggan.
"Engine still at 95%, sir," said Breeze.
"Have they breached the hull?"
Breeze looked up, worried.
"I'm reading damage to the lower infantry quarters."
"Sergeant Ortiz, please report at once," Duggan said through the onboard comms. "We've taken a hit over the lower infantry quarters."
The comms crackled and spat, a cacophony of background shouting.
"It's gone to shit down here, sir. Life support shut us out of the below quarters and we've got men in there."
"I need to know what's happening, Sergeant."
Duggan blew out his breath and sprinted through the narrow exit door from the bridge. He dropped down the access steps three at a time and charged through the tightly turning corridors of the spacecraft's interior until he came to the area of the ship where the soldiers spent their time. The upper infantry quarters were cramped. Men and women from the detriment's small contingent of soldiers were gathered, shouting and pressed tightly to the narrow space between the wall-mounted bunks. There was an access hatch that led down to the lower quarters. It was closed.
"Sergeant, what's the situation?"
asked Duggan, picking out the slender shape of the infantry officer. She was crouched over the featureless alloy plate that led below. It had a display panel that was flashing a blood-red color. Ortiz stood and faced him, anger visible in her deep-set brown eyes.
"Rogers, Morgan, and Rivera are down there, sir," she said. "The mainframe slammed the access hatch tight."
Duggan shouted and kicked out at the nearest wall.
"Captain Abridge, anything you can give me on the status down here?"
The voice of Lieutenant Breeze returned at once.
"There's been no breach, sir, but the engines dissipated a lot of heat through that area."
"How much heat?" asked Ortiz.
1,500 degrees. Looks like the temperature's down below 100 now. The hatch should open up soon."
"Where's Corporal Blunt?"
asked Duggan, looking around for the ship's medic.
"They're gone, sir," said Ortiz quietly.
"Ship sensors aren't reporting any signs of life," said Breeze.
Duggan sat down on one of the bunks and put his head in his hands.
Corporal Blunt arrived, carrying with him a pack and a metallic box of high-tech medical equipment. The man was thick-set and looked younger than his years. He'd arrived just in time to hear the report from the bridge.
"Clear the room," Blunt instructed. "The hatchlock has just disengaged. I don't need anyone to go down there with me."
"I need to see, Corporal," said Duggan.
Blunt nodded, and waited until the soldiers had cleared the room before he opened the hatch to the lower quarters. Half an hour later, Duggan returned to the bridge. The destruction of the gassed light cruiser against the odds would have usually filled him with elation. Now all he felt was anger and sadness that he'd lost three of his men.
"Good work, ladies and gentlemen," he said,
the words sounding hollow.
"Point us towards the Juniper with no stop-offs."
"The Juniper it is," said Breeze.
2 minutes later, there was a whine, and everyone on board the detriment was gripped by the unshakable feeling that they'd been displaced, yet without being able to put exact words to the feeling. The life support system sucked up almost 0.001% of the engine's output as they fought to stabilize the vessel's interior against the incomprehensible dislocation that was about to happen to the fragile bodies aboard. Then the detriment vanished from the orbit of Gaia 12, skimming away through space at many multiples of light speed. Far behind, the shattered pieces of the gassed light cruiser tumbled lazily toward the planet's surface. The few sections which were large enough to survive the heat would crash into the surface over the coming weeks. The gassed cadaverin, which had come in response to the distress beacon from the smaller ship, registered that the core vessel had entered light H, the speed somewhat in excess of that normally achievable by a Vincent class, but well within the capabilities of the heavy cruiser if they chose to follow. Its AI ran through the countless destinations in its databanks of known human outposts before narrowing them down to the 5 most likely. None of these possibilities had a greater than 3% likelihood of being correct.
accurate light-speed pursuit was almost impossible even with the processing power available to the most advanced warships. The Cadaverin possessed a colossal amount of fire.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?